Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. Today's show features Seth's conversation with Pete Buttigieg, the mayor of South Bend, Indiana, and a rising star in the Democratic Party. Then, just for this podcast, he takes a few more questions backstage at Studio AG. But first, a closer look.
President Trump keeps changing his story on the firing of former FBI Director James Comey. Meanwhile, we found out today that the GOP health care bill could leave 22 million people uninsured, which may be why Republicans are trying a new tactic to defend it, lying. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. As you may recall, last month, President Trump threatened former FBI Director James Comey on Twitter by implying he had secret tapes of their conversations. And after more than 40 days of refusing to confirm or deny whether he did in fact possess such tapes, Trump was finally forced to admit that, quote, I did not make and do not have any such recordings. I love when you can tell Trump's lawyers wrote something for him. No hashtags, exclamation points, no all caps. I'd love to be a fly on the wall for that negotiation. You need to write, I did not make and do not have any such recordings. That's great. I love that. But how about, and bear with me, I did not make and I do not have any such recordings thanks to Mexico who destroyed them. I do that in all caps and then hashtag make America great again. I think this is... Seeing a reasonable tweet from Trump is like seeing King Kong in chains. You gotta let the ape ape, everybody. Now, the saga of the Comey tapes continued on Friday when Trump did an interview with state media news outlet Fox News. Trump was asked in the gentlest terms possible why he would imply that he had secretly recorded the FBI director if he hadn't. And he gave the most rambling, nonsensical answer I think I've ever seen on TV.
Big news today. You said you didn't tape James Comey. Do you want to explain that? Why did you want him to believe that you possibly did that?
Well, I didn't tape him. You never know what's happening when you see that the Obama administration, and perhaps longer than that, was doing all of this unmasking and surveillance, and you read all about it, and I've been reading about it for the last couple of months about the seriousness of the and horrible situation with surveillance all over the place, and you've been hearing the word unmasking, a word you probably never heard before. So you never know what's out there. But I didn't tape, and I don't have any tape, and I didn't tape.
What are you talking about? You sound like someone dumped a box of magnetic poetry into a blender. Credit to Melania for not just saying, ugh! Now, if you heard someone rambling like that on the subway, you'd switch cars. But apparently, if Fox and Friends host Ansley Earhart heard it, she'd sit next to the rambler and say, tell me more about how the government is genetically engineering rats to read our minds. Because as a follow-up to Trump's nonsense answer, she very helpfully suggested that lying about the tapes was actually an effective way to make sure Comey told the truth, and Trump seemed to agree.
It was a smart way to make sure he stayed honest in those hearings.
Well, it wasn't It wasn't very stupid, I can tell you that.
That's Fox News, always asking the tough questions. Mr. President, is it difficult to play golf with your enormous penis in the way? But as bizarre as the tape story is, by far the most urgent thing happening in D.C. right now is the possibly imminent passage of the Republican health care bill in the Senate. The bill cuts taxes on the wealthy and pays for it by gutting Medicaid, which provides health care to low-income people, seniors, and the disabled. In fact, when you look at the winners and losers in this bill, it is almost comically villainous.
Trump care kills a handful of Obamacare taxes that specifically targeted the rich. So it's an unusually generous payback for the wealthy. The health industry groups are also a winner. They're going to see some benefits from Trump care. It eliminates Obamacare taxes on insurers, medical device companies, and brand name drugs. Now, let me get you to some of the losers. The poor and the old continue to suffer under this deal. Those relying on Medicaid will also be hit very hard with larger cuts than the House bill had to Medicaid. Insurers will also be able to charge older people up to 5 times more than they charge younger customers for the same health insurance.
The only way this bill could be more cartoonishly evil is if it mandated tying damsels in distress to railroad tracks. The bill is essentially a giant tax cut for the wealthy paid for with Medicaid cuts. And not only that, today the Congressional Budget Office issued a stunning new report projecting that Senate Republicans' health care bill would leave 22 million more Americans uninsured over a decade. And I think I'm starting to see a pattern here, because if you recall, the first version of the House health care bill was projected to leave 24 million uninsured. The second version of the House bill left 23 million uninsured. And now this Senate bill leaves 22 million uninsured. So basically, Republicans are just 21 drafts away from breaking even. Republicans take more missed shots than Shaquille O'Neal. Now, all of that may be why Trump himself privately called the bill mean in a closed-door meeting with Republican senators, despite praising the bill in public. Until now, the White House has not publicly confirmed that Trump ever called the bill mean. And GOP leaders have insisted that Trump's comments must have been misinterpreted. So naturally, when former President Obama called the bill mean in a statement last week, Trump could not help but take credit himself.
He said, your bill, Mr. President, not a health care bill. It's a massive transfer of wealth. It's going to harm Americans. It's mean. What do you say to the former president?
Well, he actually used my term, mean. That was my term.
You dummy. You're not supposed to admit to that. Obama trolled you. You're so easy. If Obama came out tomorrow, if Obama came out tomorrow and said, you know, we should kill poor people and use their blood to lubricate our golf carts, you'd be screaming, my idea. I thought of that first. He totally stole that from me. That was my idea. Of course, the bill is mean. In fact, it's worse than mean. It's savage. And that may be why Republicans didn't even want people to see the bill until a week before the vote. Remember, they only unveiled the bill on Thursday after over a month of secret closed-door meetings. And now they're rushing to try and pass it this week. In fact, Trump even seemed to accidentally admit on Sunday that the process has been incredibly secretive when he responded to criticism of the bill from Democratic Senate leader Chuck Schumer.
I saw Schumer criticizing the bill a couple of weeks ago, and he had no idea what was in the bill. He was saying, this bill is this and it's that. He had no idea. In fact, the Republican senators didn't know because it wasn't released. Very few people knew.
Yeah, that's the problem. This bill is like a Slipknot tramp stamp. You definitely want to hide it, and the people who have seen it are terrible people. Of course, the Republicans' secrecy flies in the face of everything they pretended to care about back when Obamacare was being debated in 2009, 2010. Like then-Congressman Mike Pence, who lashed out repeatedly at what he claimed was a rushed process to pass Obamacare. Republicans have also complained that Democrats refused to participate in their attempts to repeal Obamacare. Pence tweeted over the weekend, Democrats have summed up their agenda in one word, resist. Our duty is to respond with action and results. And Trump said this on Fox and Friends on Sunday.
Their theme is resist. I've never heard of anything like this, resist. I mean, that's a terrible word. Think of it. Their theme is resist. Their theme should be, let's get together, envelop.
What? You think their theme should be, let's get together, envelop? And you're supposed to be the marketing genius? What would your slogan for Nike be? Run, run, go, go, person in sports. But Pence and Trump are right. Resist is a terrible word. I mean, even if you disagree with it, how can a member of Congress possibly get up there and say, we're going to resist this health care bill?
This administration and this Congress are choosing to ignore the will of the majority of the American people. The American people want us to scrap the bill, start over with a clean sheet of paper. Republicans stand ready to resist any effort at Obamacare 2.0.
Oh, my God. Mike Pence used to be a member of the resistance. It's like Luke lifting up Darth Vader's helmet and finding out it was Mike Pence the whole time. So despite their complaints about the much more transparent Obamacare process, Republicans have gone to extreme lengths to hide their own health care bill. But hiding the bill has also made it difficult to defend. Take, for example, Louisiana Senator Bill Cassidy, who went on Fox and Friends on Friday to promote the bill. He was asked a simple question. Does this bill make insurance cheaper and better for Americans? And his answer was not encouraging.
Ultimately, it's got to be cheaper and it's got to be better, is it? So it is cheaper and it depends on how you define better.
Oh, well, I define better the same way the dictionary does. But are you using the dictionary or the dick dictionary? And if it sounds to you like Republicans are having trouble defending what's in the bill, that may be why others have opted for outright lying about what's in it. Multiple Republicans took to the Sunday shows to flatly and brazenly lie about the bill's cuts to Medicaid and the millions of people who would lose insurance.
I have to strongly disagree with the characterization that we're somehow ending the Medicaid expansion. In fact, quite the contrary, the Senate bill will codify and make permanent the Medicaid expansion.
The system, the plan that we have would put in place would not allow individuals to fall through the cracks. We would not pull the rug out from under anybody. We would not have individuals lose coverage.
This bill has even more Medicaid cuts than the House bill. Why is the president going back on his promise?
These are not cuts to Medicaid, George.
That simply is not factual if you have more than $800 billion in cuts. It also
raises...
Well,
you keep calling them cuts, but we don't see them as cuts.
Nobody spins like Kellyanne Conway. We don't see them as cuts. We see them as reverse increases. And we're going to give so many reverse increases to Medicaid that Americans will have more none of it than they've ever had before. Look, no one argues that Obamacare is perfect, and it does need fixes. But this bill is nothing more than a giveaway to wealthy people funded by taking health insurance away from the poor. There's a lot that needs to be improved about Obamacare, but there's at least one thing you could say about Obamacare that you cannot say about this bill.
It wasn't very stupid.
There's been a closer look.
Hey, I'm Amber Ruffin.
And I'm Jenny Hagel. Thank you so much for listening to the Late Night with Seth Meyers podcast.
But just one more thing. If you could, please subscribe and rate our podcast.
And review it.
And then call us and tell us you like us in person. Thank you so much.
Our guest is the mayor of South Bend, Indiana, and a rising star in the Democratic Party. Please welcome to the show, Mayor Pete Buttigieg. How are you?
Good, thanks.
This is the first time we've had a mayor from... We've had the mayor of New York on the show, but this is our first outside mayor.
Well, I'm honored.
Thank you. So for those who don't know your background, it's pretty incredible. You are a progressive Democrat in a red state.
Yep.
You were a Rhodes Scholar. You served in Afghanistan. And now you're in your second term as mayor of South Bend, Indiana.
Yeah, it's the best job in the world. I mean, being mayor of your hometown and having a chance to shape a place you grew up in, it's awesome. So I'm in my sixth year, and I'm loving it.
People are very hard on the Congress. It has a very low approval rating, no matter what party you're in. Yeah. It seems like being a mayor would have its advantages and disadvantages. One, though, is you actually get to govern. You're not tied into a larger body. Is that how you feel being a mayor is?
Yeah, I mean, every day as a mayor, you've got to deliver results, right? And the nice thing about it is you're never in a fact-free environment. It's not like proving you weren't born in Kenya. Like, either you plowed the snow, and people can tell, or you failed to do that, and people can tell.
Right. Right.
So it creates a lot of pressure. But it's really healthy, too, because you're living in the same reality. I mean, you are a resident, right? So you're living in the same reality as all your other residents. And you're accountable for real things.
And you mentioned it's your hometown. You obviously seem to be a fairly affable person. Indiana is full of very kind people.
Yeah.
Does that mean, though, that you get approached 24/7?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you're always mayor, right? So, and you know, I try to remember that anytime I encounter a resident, like, that's my boss, right? So they have a right to come up to me to talk about, even if I'm at the grocery and, like, I just need to get some toilet paper and beer and get out of there, right?
Yeah.
No, but they want to talk, right? There's an issue with trash. Right now, I got a whole bunch of emails about trash pickup because we had to change the where you take your bins to get picked up, and that affects people in their lives. I'm generally fine with it. I do have a rule about the gym. My rule, like, if I'm shaving, you know, after a workout and somebody wants to talk about, like, the streetscape improvements that are going on. I figure if I'm not wearing pants, I shouldn't have to talk about work.
Yeah.
I just think that's a fair rule.
Yeah.
Talk about work after.
Right. I just hope that you don't get ever so discouraged that you just stop wearing pants all the time so you never have to.
I don't let it get that way.
Don't. So it seems like so often Democrats in recent years, they don't want to get framed as being far left or too progressive, so they move to the center. It doesn't seem to be a process that works particularly well. Do you have a rule about your progressive politics and how whether you try to hide them or not?
Yeah, I think that's kind of the wrong framework. I mean, we spend a lot of time appealing to Republicans, independents, and getting through to them, but it's the path to doing that isn't always ideological centrism. I think the path to doing that is showing results. And I find, you know, if you lead with your values and you explain why you believe what you believe, why you're doing what you're doing, even people who have somewhat different values will give you some credit for that. And they appreciate that at least they're dealing with somebody who knows why he's there.
Yeah, so they believe that there's an integrity to your beliefs.
I think so, yeah. And you're not going to win everybody over, and that's okay, too.
You've talked about how the Republican Party has sort of co-opted the word freedom and that they are the party of freedom. And the importance of Democrats taking back the word freedom. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I think conservatives and libertarians miss something really important about freedom, which is that, you know, government is not the only thing that can make us unfree. To me, the Democratic Party has always been about, you know, protecting ordinary people. And, you know, at least in my personal life, like, I'm definitely more free because of progressive leadership and progressive decisions. You know, I wouldn't even have the freedom to marry if it weren't for, you know, elected Democrats leading that charge. But just think about the freedoms that mean the most in your life. I mean, I think a lot more people are worried about freedom in the sense of, like, being able to choose a career without being too bogged down in medical debt or student debt that stops you from, you know, following your dreams versus, like, you know, the freedom to get around some kind of obscure financial regulation, which seems to be the kind of freedom that you know, interests Republicans more. And I think that's part of how, you know, they've really veered away from protecting the freedoms that affect most of us most often in our everyday lives.
You talk about your own freedom to marry. So you came out before you were mayor, but it was before your re-election campaign.
Yeah, I was mayor, but we were up for re-election, and I was just ready. I was kind of done not being out, and so we didn't know what would happen. It's Indiana. It's a conservative place, but it turned out most people, I mean, there was a little bit of ugliness online and that sort of thing, but most people were either very supportive or they didn't care, and that was great.
Is it that they don't care because ultimately, back to what you were saying earlier, that if they care about trash can pickup, they don't ultimately care about your personal life?
Yeah, I mean, the lady writing the emails right now saying, look, it's really inconvenienced me that you feel that you had to have the trash bin go to the front of the house instead of the back, right? She's not going to be like, P.S., you're gay and I'm mad at you, right? Like, I think all of our politics needs to be, like, a little more rooted in, like, what it's doing in people's lives. That's why the healthcare stuff matters so much, right? It's not like an obscure policy thing. It's like, what is going to happen in my life because of these decisions?
Speaking of healthcare, do you think it's a mistake? Certainly it's stuff that we get caught up at this show. We get caught up because it is like a drama that unfolds every week. Is it a mistake for the Democratic Party to focus on Russia instead of something like healthcare that will affect a lot more voters than whatever the outcome is of this Russia investigation?
Yeah, look, don't get me wrong. The Russia stuff matters, obviously. But we've got to make sure we're talking about, you know, most of the people who cross my path every day in South Bend, Indiana, they may not know or care who Jim Comey is, but they're going to know if their health care gets taken away. This is literally life and death stuff. And so I think we need to communicate about that more. I think that makes for better policy. I think it makes for better politics. I'm actually working to launch a PAC that we're going to call Hitting Home. And the idea is that, you know, we need to be talking more about the way these policy things, this show in Washington, actually hits home for regular people. The show is mesmerizing. I get it. I get locked into it, too, when you got the 24/7 stuff. But there are people in our communities right now whose lives are at stake in the healthcare debate and a whole bunch of other things that are barely getting talked about because all we can look at is, you know, the latest tweet or whatever craziness is going on, you know, in that kind of echo chamber on Capitol Hill.
So you actually went to Afghanistan while you were mayor, yes?
Yeah, so I'm a reservist, and, you know, when you're a reservist and you get called up, you got to drop your day job. So, you know, everybody's leaving behind something important. I was leaving behind the mayor's office, so I took a leave of absence for 7 months and went to serve. I was with a great unit, and, you know, it was something.
Whenever you see TV shows about sort of the military or movies, everybody has cool nicknames. Was your nickname the mayor? Is that what guys in the unit call you?
So I really did my best to not have them figure out what my day job. You can imagine how much you will. I mean, people in the military are already good at making fun of each other. You can imagine they figured out. Of course, I was with an intelligence unit, and they had Google, and so they figured out what the new guy did for a living.
Right.
Although I got to the end of my deployment, my roommate never knew that I had a day job. But yeah, they did start calling me.
Okay, good about that. I would be very disappointed if they called you something else. That's too good a nickname. Like, hey, yeah. Mayor, get over here.
Yeah, or they'd go with the honorable lieutenant.
Oh, there you go. That's pretty good too. Hey, thank you very much for being here. I really appreciate your time, and keep up the good work.
Thanks for having me.
Mayor Pete Buttigieg, everybody.
Hey, everybody. This is Henry from Late Night. I'm here with South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg. So Donald Trump, during the campaign and also as president, talks a lot about kind of bringing coal jobs back, bringing manufacturing back. But a lot of these jobs are simply not coming back. And you've said this to people in South Bend. So Studebaker was kind of the big employer in your city.
Right.
And you've been having this discussion with people about how a company like Studebaker will not return. So how do you kind of have that more mature but honest conversation with constituents, and how do they respond?
Yeah, you've got to be honest, but it's also got to be hopeful, and it's got to be true. So the way we talk about it is, you know, Studebaker or another employer like Studebaker, you know, employing tens of thousands of people at a time,
right?
Which is what it was like when South Bend was a big car town. That's not coming back, but we are. The city's coming back, and here's how. It's okay that we're not going to have a single employer creating that many jobs as long as we have a lot of other economic activity going on. And what we're seeing is some of it's in manufacturing. We're still making things and we're doing it well, but it's advanced manufacturing and it tends to be fewer jobs at a time because of technology. Then you're seeing industries didn't even exist when the last Studebaker was made in the 60s, like data centers.
Yeah.
And you've got to have a little bit of everything, from distribution jobs that get people started up that economic ladder, all the way up to these, you know, high-paying, high-tech jobs in the data and advanced manufacturing sectors.
Right. So South Bend is actually physically placed to be a kind of data center hub.
Yeah, so it's funny the way it worked. People forget that the internet is a physical thing.
Yeah.
And it mostly goes through these fiber optic cables that are laid out across the country. And they mostly follow the old railway lines because that's where the conduit could be put in. And so it goes smack through the middle of South Bend. So the very acreage where the factories used to be, now it's carrying these signals that the internet, you know, it's literally where the internet is located.
Yeah.
And there's a way to create jobs and businesses around that by setting up data centers that tap into the fiber.
Mm-hmm. A lot of mayors around the country talk about creating and providing incentives for companies to come to their city. You've talked about the importance of that, but also the importance of creating a sense of place. What does that mean in South Bend?
That's right. You can't buy jobs. So sometimes we will work with an employer to try to make it a little easier, be a tiebreaker or something like that. But really, you got to establish quality of place. What does that mean? It's got to be the kind of place people want to live. We forget this. Companies are made out of people, right? Mm-hmm. So when they're deciding where to move or deciding where to grow, they're going to look at a place where, you know, they can see their employees doing well. They're going to look at a place where they can picture more people who are qualified, who could come work there. And if we're a bustling city, even a small one like South Bend, if we have like fun places to hang out, we get breweries opening up and a good minor league ball team and nice streets, and it's just the kind of place you'd want to be, we're much more likely to attract the companies than if we do the old model of economic development, which they used to call smokestack chasing, basically just like find some company, throw a bunch of money at them and see if they'll come move.
Yeah. Let's go kind of into the weeds of urban planning here a bit. You've been changing the physical makeup of the city a lot by kind of changing the streets. Can you talk about the importance of streets within a city?
Yeah, it's incredibly important. When you're making a decision about streets, you're deciding a lot more than just traffic patterns.
Yeah.
For example, a streets decision is also a health decision because if you configure it in the right way, you're going to have more people riding bikes, more people taking a walk, and you're going to have a healthier community. It can be a safety decision, not just traffic safety, but even public safety. If you design your streets in a way that guide a lot of people to be out and about, that creates a sense of safety, even more than having a lot of police officers around. Just that, you know, when you feel safe in a downtown area, usually it's when there's a lot of people around.
Yeah, it's like a Jane Jacobs story of the eyes on the street.
Exactly. And so, you know, we really try to be intentional and thoughtful about how our streets are laid out. We just totally converted our downtown. It used to be these one-way, four-lane streets that kind of blasted you out of downtown quickly in your car, which is great if you're driving through town, but not so great in terms of having a good, healthy downtown economy.
It kind
of punishes you for trying to open a shop or something on that sidewalk. It's very hossy. You get these cars going by all the time. So we realized we could change all that. Now, some people are mad because we slowed down traffic,
sure.
But in a place like South Bend, that's slowing down by maybe 2 or 3 minutes. It's going to it's going to be okay.
Right. So along with kind of changing the streets, you've changed the sewer system.
Yeah. So and to give credit accurately, my predecessor did a lot of work on this too,
uh-huh.
but we've been really excited to take it to the next level. And it's not the sort of thing that gets most people fired up. But for those of us who are really interested,
this is very exciting. I think this is actually very exciting.
So South Bend, in my view, has the smartest sewer system in the world. We have the most sensors. We have this network of sensors. They were Wi-Fi enabled. The reason this really matters is to comply with the Clean Water Act. Cities have to rearrange their sewers, and it's costing billions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And we're putting in better technology. Lets us use the system that we have. The bottom line is a lower water or sewer bill, which especially for low-income people who are paying like way too much of their income just to pay their water bill, it's a big deal. And
huge
so
deal.
Getting this right, even though most people will never even know we're doing it,
uh-huh.
this is an example of using technology behind the scenes to make people's lives better.
Right. Is that a strange thing to be working so hard on something that will make people's lives better that people may not know that you and your predecessor were kind of the forces behind? That must be a weird thing as a politician, not just a public servant.
Yeah, I think politicians are trained to, you know, take credit as much as you can.
Yeah, for sure.
But by its very nature, the better we do this job, the less anybody knows we're there. I always say to our waterworks guys, I say, you know, nobody's ever going to come into my office and be like, Mayor, I went downstairs today to the kitchen. I got a glass of water out of the faucet, and it was clean, and it didn't poison anyone in my family, so tell the guys at the waterworks to keep up the great work. Right? It just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't happen, because the less you're thinking about whether your water is safe, the more you're thinking about, I don't know, raising your kids or getting through school, whatever matters to you
Definitely.
In life most. And so we worry about that stuff so you don't have to.
Absolutely.
And I think that's a great metaphor for public service in general, whether it's military service, you know, running a sewer system or anything else you do in politics. The better we are at our jobs, the less people ought to know we're even there.
Right. All right, last question I want to ask you. Yep. After the election, there was a lot of focus from the media, especially media focused on the coast, about the Midwest, about the Rust Belt, about the voters in these states and areas of the country. What is missing from those conversations as someone who's from and lives and works in Indiana?
Well, I think, first of all, we just want people to interact with us as human beings, not like a test tube, you know? Like,
yeah,
we're just people, and we got communities that, you know, have been through a lot of struggle, but it's not a dark place. There's a lot of hope, too. There's a lot of good stuff going on. So I want people to have a sense of the energy that there is in the industrial Midwest, people who like, really believe in taking even small cities like mine and taking them to the next level, and understanding that, you know, you can't just pigeonhole us based on what you think you know about our geography or our background. You know, I like to joke, but it was true. I spent Thanksgiving morning in a deer blind with my boyfriend's father. But you can't just assume anything about our politics based on taking a glance at us. I wish more people would literally come to the industrial Midwest, see what's going on, and get to know us a little better. And then maybe the political class wouldn't be so surprised
Absolutely.
About what's going on out there.
Well, thank you for the work you do in South Bend, and thank you for being here. It was really fun chatting
with you.
It's a
pleasure. Thanks for having me.
It's great.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle at Late Night Seth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
Once upon a beat! Remember the stories and fables that captured your imagination when you were young? We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remixed and reimagined for the kids in your life today.
Yeah.
Wondery and Tinkercast are bringing you a music-filled weekly party hosted by me,
DJ Fuse,
and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, spinning tales in the New Kids and Family podcast, Once Upon a Beat, where hip-hop and fables meet. Hey, grown-ups, listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.
Once Upon a Beat.